You are listening to Villanova University on iTunes U.
Thank you. I'm Kathleen Malone, and I'm the founder and the developer of the Sitterberry app. So Sitterberry is an app that connects parents with their current list of babysitters. So the idea is a parent can open up the app, look at their own babysitter's calendar of availability to see who's available, and then book them and pay them through the app. So the idea is parents don't have to text sitter after sitter to see who's available, which is time consuming and can be stressful sometimes. And from the babysitter's perspective, the babysitter can like proactively post their hours they want to babysit, so they can avoid the awkward, like, oh, can't do it, or, you know, so they can let the parents know when they're available. So I got the idea about 3 years ago when I was moving to this area from New York, and I didn't have, my current babysitter was no longer available to me because she knew I was moving. So I was texting sitter after sitter to try to get to my own going away party, and I could not find a sitter. So it was the night before the going away party, and I had just at this point been introduced to Uber, and I was in love with Uber. I thought this was the coolest thing ever. And I'm staring at my phone, and I'm like, why can't I see every high school girl within a 1 mile radius of my home that might be able to babysit for tomorrow night? Like, this is what I want right now. And you know, it wasn't there. So my mother-in-law came from about a mile away. She lived on Long Island, and she had, you know, came and she babysat for us so that we can get out for the going away party. And then I vowed that night, like, this is my idea. Like, I have my idea. I'm going to build an app that's going to make finding and booking a babysitter easier. So I have a background in software development. I worked as a software engineer and a solution architect for a lot of years before I had kids. So I had the background necessary to build this app. I also did a lot of freelance work after my children were born. But I didn't have the skills necessary, or I didn't have the experience to build an app because in 2008, you know, when I stopped working, which was in 2005, there were, you know, the smartphone really didn't exist. So I didn't know about apps. I didn't know how to build an app. So I had to just, you know, go online and start Googling, like, how do you build an app? And then I came across Stanford University has an iPhone development course, and it's free on iTunes U, which I couldn't believe, you know, that this, you know, Stanford University course is free. And what they do, and they offer it every semester, they film the actual course that's happening, and they post all the lecture notes, and they post the homework assignments. So I just went through the course, and by the end of the course, I was able to build an app. So that was September 2014, and I had Sitterberry on the Apple App Store in April of 2015. So at that point, you know, I'm working alone. I'm an independent app developer. You know, I didn't really know what to do once it was up there. So I just wrote a bunch of press releases and sent it out. And then Mainline Parent magazine picked it up, and they published it, the press release. And I got like a couple hundred downloads. And, you know, that was, you know, encouraging, and that was cool. I was happy with that. But then I didn't know, you know, I really needed to hit the pavement at that point. Like, I didn't know that was what I was supposed to do. So I sort of just sat back, and nothing really happened. I saw that Facebook offers this program called FB Start. And it's a program that Facebook runs for independent app developers like myself, because apps now are built by big companies. And an independent app developer used to be able to make a career building apps, but now someone like me is competing against, you know, large companies like Facebook that bought Instagram. You know, the popular apps are run by big companies. So Facebook has this program to connect themselves with entrepreneurs with good ideas. You know, they see these people as, you know, they see these good ideas. They also see these people as potential employees. So it's sort of their way of connecting to the startup world, because they, you know, used to be a startup themselves. So I applied in fall of 2015, and then in January 2016, I got the email from Facebook that Sitterberry was accepted. So that was, you know, really, really exciting. And I decided, okay, like I'm going back into this, I'm gonna give it 100%. And I was invited to apply to UIF, it's the Unique Individual Foundation, and it's a local like incubator program here on the main line. And they offer office space and college interns. I think there's a couple of Villanova interns that work there. And they offer it to local entrepreneurs. So I was given office space, and they helped me market the app, and they helped with the user interface. And then I applied for TechCrunch's Pitch Off. So I don't know if you're familiar with the HBO series Silicon Valley. There's the big TechCrunch disrupt where Pied Piper, like, you know, they pitched their app, and then they got money. And so I applied for that, and I was accepted. It was one of 10 companies accepted into the TechCrunch Pitch Off in Brooklyn. So I went and I pitched it at this nightclub in Williamsburg. And it was sort of like 8 Mile. I don't know if you saw that, like the Eminem. And like there's the audience judges you, and there's judges on stage asking you questions. And that was also really cool. I was in the top three for audience choice. It didn't win, but that was, you know, also really cool that it got to, you know, top three for audience choice. So that was all last spring. And then I got the attention of a CEO in Philadelphia who has a company that builds an app. And he invited me in to meet with their VP of engineering and product development and marketing. And he offered to help me raise money. And he was, you know, going to show me how to get Sitterberry off the ground. And I think it was at that point that I realized I needed to make a decision. Like, I was working on this app myself, and it was really fun, and it was getting attention. But if it wanted to be something that took off, I was going to have to be CEO, and I was gonna have to raise money, and I was gonna have to hire employees. And I think I just decided, you know, this is a resume builder in the end. Like, it was a great experience. At that point, my kids were also older. I didn't really even need babysitters anymore. And I just decided, like, I'm going to take this experience, and if I have another great idea, you know, I can apply it at that point. So Sitterberry is still on the App Store. So if you want to take a look at it, you can download it. I'm not really supporting it any longer. I'm teaching at Penn State and at Delaware County Community College. But what I can do is I can tell you what I learned along the way. So if you have an idea for an app, I'd like to share with you what I've learned and what you can do to get it going. So you have the idea for a killer app. And I know, like, I get phone calls and emails from, you know, cousins, like, coming out of the woodwork I haven't seen in a lot of years, like, oh, I have this great app idea, you know, can you build it for me or tell me how you did it? So I know, like, there are a lot of people out there with some good ideas. They don't know where to start. So the first thing you need to do is, you know, you have your idea. You need to come up with a feature list. So you need to, like, write down, you know, everything you envision for your app, and write down all of your notes. You want to talk to friends and family about your idea. I know a lot of people are afraid that their idea is going to get stolen. You're going to learn it's not that easy to build an app, you know, yourself. So if you have the idea, it's not likely that it's going to be stolen by a friend or family. And you don't want to build this in a bubble. So you want to get the feedback. You want to get validation. You want to know that it resonates with other people. They'll probably give you some good ideas along the way. If you do talk to a developer or a designer, you might want to, you know, you'd probably consider having them sign a non-disclosure agreement before you tell them the idea. You want to do market research. You want to see if your app already exists or the idea exists, and see who's developing it. If it's a big company, you know, you may want to move on to another idea because it's going to be hard to compete against that. But you know, the Sitterberry app was competing. You know, I saw like Care.com as a competitor, and that's a big company, but it wasn't exactly the same thing. And I couldn't see anyone out there that had this availability calendar. There was nothing out there. So that's when you zero in. Like, you see, you have the idea, and it's not out there. Like, that's the idea you want to go for. You also want to check if it is out there. You know, check the user ratings, see what this app has, you know, and see if you can add something else to it if it does exist out there. You want to know your demographics. you know, who is this app, who is it going to appeal to? So, you know, in my case, you know, I thought, you know, it was mostly moms around my age, and you want to know, you know, what kind of apps are they using? What's their behavior? So, and you want to model your app, you know, based on what they're used to. So I looked at Facebook, and I had the iPhone app, and, you know, they have the tab bar down below where you can, you know, click on your news feed, and so I knew if I build Sitterberry, it's got to be done with the tab bar on the bottom. If your demographic is for a younger crowd, like my son uses Snapchat now, and I wanted to check out how to use it. This was just the other day, and I couldn't figure it out. Like, there's no tab bar on the bottom, and I'm swiping left and right and up and down, and I was like, John, like, how do you use this? And then he had to show me, and he can just goes in. He knew how to get, you know, to the chat, to the photos. So if you have to know who your demographic is and what their behavior is with apps, and then model your app based on that. You need to identify your monetization strategy. So, you know, obviously, if you want to raise money, you have to show that your app is going to make money. Apps are almost always free. So you don't want to charge people money for your app because they won't download it. They're not going to take that chance any longer. So subscription-based models are very popular. Sitterberry is free, but, you know, my original idea was parents would pay, you know, $1.99 or $2.99 a year to view their sitter's calendar. You know, so it's pretty inexpensive, but if you had a large user base, it could be meaningful. There's also in-app purchases, or you can, your app can be totally free, and you can hope to build up a really large user base and hope that maybe another company would be interested in buying your app based on, you know, getting that user data. So those are popular strategies to make money. So once you have that and you feel solid about your idea and that you're going to make money, you want to build out some wireframes. And that's something you might be able to do on your own. So this is not a functioning app. This is just a visualization of your app. You can do that in Photoshop. You can do it. Balsamic is another popular wireframe tool. And hopefully you can do that on your own or pretty inexpensively. So then you want to go into coding. And I'm going to talk about that more in a minute. But the one thing I want to state is that apps are native to they're native apps, and they're not platform agnostic. So if you build your app, you have to build three separate apps if you want it to be on the iPhone, for Android, or for Windows. And that's a lot of work, and it's completely different technology for each platform. So it's expensive and time-consuming. It goes against the whole spirit of the internet, I think. You know, when the internet was built, we suddenly had one platform. You could build a website, and people on Windows, people on Mac, people on Unix could view your website through a browser. It didn't matter what platform you were on. And then Java was developed around that time. And Java had the promise of you could build an application and it could run on any operating system. And now here we are back to building an application for each separate operating system. And that's going to change. It has to change. So keep that in mind. So if you're not planning on developing the app yourself, and you go out and you look for a developer to build this for you, it's pretty expensive, and that's why. So once you have it built, you want to market the app. So you start with press releases, social media. Facebook is a great place to market your app. Facebook allows you to target your demographics. So you can go to Facebook Ad Manager and say you want to target anyone who has an interest in parenting, women between the ages of 25 and 45, or, you know, whatever your demographic is, you can target them on Facebook, and only those people will see your ad. So it's a very cost-effective way of marketing your product. And then once you have your app out there, you've marketed it, you want to capture data on who's using your app and how many downloads you have, what features of your app people are using, because you'll need all that data when you want to go out to raise money. people are going to, you know, investors are going to want to see, you know, your growth rate and what people are using. So there's a lot of tools out there that will allow you to embed within your app the ability to capture that data. So you want to make sure that that's built into your app at that time. Okay, so as far as the tools for developing your app, so to build your app for the iPhone, you're going to need Xcode. So Xcode is an IDE, that's an integrated development environment, that it's built by Apple, and it's free, so you can download it. It's, as you can see here, you can visualize your app here. It gives you a lot of GUIs that you can drag and drop, buttons, and other things on, you know, so you can see what your app looks like. The user interface is visual, it's there for you to see. And then you're writing your code here on the right. This is the code, you know, that does things when you press the button, you know. So the Xcode is the development environment that you want. It's very mature. I think it's an excellent IDE, and that's what you would use for iOS, for your iPhone development. I wrote Sitterberry in an Objective-C. That's the language that I used. And about 2 years, was that your question? Sorry, yes. Okay, so Objective-C is the language that you'll need to know, or Swift. So 2 years ago, Apple released a second programming language called Swift, which looks, Objective-C was sort of an ugly language. Like, you hadn't seen anything like this in a long time. I had never seen a language like it.
I loved it. It looked like C.
Yeah, yes. But it didn't look object-oriented. It looked weird, you know, the brackets. Yeah, so I think, but I got used to it. I used it for a year, and I got used to it, and I liked it. And then all of a sudden, apps need to be written in Swift, and Swift is a more modern-looking language. So on top of having the free platform issue, you had the issue of learning a new language and a new development tool within just one platform. So that's iPhone. For the Android platform, the Android Studio is the IDE. It's the official IDE for Android. And I did build a version of Sitterberry for Android. I never put it up on the Google Store. So I do have some experience with Android Studio. I didn't like it as much as Xcode. It's not as mature. The user interface part of it was not as easy to use. It is Java. Java is the language behind the Android apps. And that was the language that I had used when I was working before I had kids. So that part of it I did like. I think Java is an easier language to learn than Objective-C was. There's also a lot more Java programmers out there if you are looking to outsource your development. You'll have an easier time finding a Java developer. And Android is a more popular platform than the iPhone. More people have an Android phone than an iPhone. Okay, now there's a third tool. There's a third tool out there, and that is because of this problem with the separate development for each platform. There are some tools out there that are trying to ease that burden. A popular one is called Xamarin, and that was recently bought by Microsoft. So that's, you know, promising. Like, this is a useful tool. So what Xamarin will do is you build one app in C#, and C# is as popular, or almost as popular, as Java. So that's a common programming language. So there'll be a lot of developers who know C#. You build it in C#. And then it compiles the code, and it compiles it to native code for both the iPhone and the Android platform and the Windows phone. You know, Microsoft bought it, so of course, I think it's their way to get more apps onto the Windows phone. So the reviews are, I have not used it. I know someone who has used it, and they have a nice app on both stores, the Google Play and the Apple Store. The reviews are pretty good. It's not 100%. You can't do everything that you could do if you wrote two separate apps natively, but you can do, from what I read, 80%. So if I were to build another app, I would definitely use Zamarian because Sitterberry is only on the App Store. And if you have a babysitter who has an Android phone or a parent with an Android phone, you can't connect with them. So you want, you know, especially with something like Sitterberry, a messaging app, you want to have it on both platforms. So Zamarian will allow you to do that. Yeah?
Can you start from Zamarian and then transfer into one of the others in order to further customize it?
Yeah, I believe that you can. And that's what people do, is that they'll build it, like the majority of it in Zamarian, and then they'll tweak it, you know, through each separate development tool. I don't know how it's done, but I think that is what happens. Yeah. So that's Zamarian. There's another. Yes?
Is it more difficult to start with the web-based app platform and then integrate it to Apple and Android Windows?
I don't know if it's more difficult, but if that's also. You'll be using different language, different everything. So you'll be building on a third platform. So I know Laura's probably going to address that. I think that is going to be the answer, is that eventually you're just going to build, I don't know, through the browser, through a web view, through something. Because right now, like, you don't have as good of a user experience, I would say, if you're doing something through the browser on your phone, as opposed to a native app. But hopefully that will change.
So just thinking of how like Google Chrome is integrating and how they're giving you the ability to have the full force integration between like tablets and laptops and like cell phones for your actual application views, and if that might like give an easier integration process across platforms.
Yes, and Google is what they're doing right now, is that they're trying to make it so that you're no longer downloading native apps, you're going to be using Google Chrome for all of your applications. Yeah. Yeah. It's not there yet, but that's where it's headed. Yeah. So in the meantime, you know, there's Zamarian, and then there's React Native, which is like Zamarian except it uses JavaScript, which is an even easier programming language than C# or Java. It's a scripting language, and there's a lot of developers out there who know how to use it. And Facebook now owns the React Native framework, so that's going to help make it a more popular framework. And then Cordova is something like a web view, and that uses HTML and cascading style sheets. And that, I don't have experience with that, but that's also another popular alternative. So your data. Sitterberry had to hold on to the babysitter's calendar of availability and all of its data. You need to hold on to, you know, your users, their login, their passwords, so you need a database. Sitterberry used Parse. I don't know if anyone's familiar with Parse. Parse is a very easy database to use. When it was released and when I started using it, it was hosted by Parse. You didn't have to host it. You did not have to install it. You did not have to maintain it. All you had to do was download their library and put the code, you know, into your app code to save the data. It was like, it was a dream. And it was also free. So it was amazing that you could use this. You only had to start paying money if you had like a million users, you know, and it was like I could use this forever for free, and it's simple. And then last January or February, I got an email. So Facebook bought them, and then Facebook, you know, sent an email to all its users that Parse, you know, is still there, except they're not going to host it, they're not going to support it. It's going to be open source. So what I had to do was install my own instance of Parse. I had to get an Amazon Web Services account. I had to install my own instance of Parse there and maintain it. And, you know, it was a good learning experience, but it was a little bit stressful, and it's not something that you want to have to do. Like, the whole purpose of Parse was that it was done for you. So that's still there. That's still a good option. It's, you know, if you're willing to host your own database, Parse is a good option. There is also Firebase, which Firebase is similar to Parse. It's owned by Google, and Google, I believe, still will host the data for you. So those are two easy and popular databases that you can use to host your data.
What was that second one?
Firebase. Yes, and that's owned by Google. And it was very similar to Parse. Okay, so finally, I just want to end with some resources out there So if you do have, you know, if you want to build your own app, there's, you know, first this developing iOS 9 apps with Swift. This is the most recent Stanford course. So I highly recommend these. There's also Udacity offers an intro to Android class, and that's free. Udacity offers a lot of nano degrees, so you can go, you know, you can get a nano degree in Android development if you want. I think you have to pay for that, but they have a lot of free courses before you get the degree, which is helpful. There's also like Stack Overflow if you're a developer. They have really a great resource. That's helpful. And there's a lot of free tutorials online. So if you do a little bit of Googling, you'll see, you know, you can learn how to do this. Yes. So there's Udacity, there's the iPhone, there's Stack Overflow, and Ray Wenderlich, he has some really good tutorials on iPhone development. So that's all. I'm going to pass it over to Laura. Thank you.
I'm going to apologize ahead of time for my Coke. I've been a programmer, well, not so much a programmer, but I started programming when I graduated from college, unfortunately 40 years ago. But there was an article in the Boston Globe shortly after I started working about the new technology culture that was growing up in Boston in the late 70s, and they had this whole thing about how you could diagnose a programmer, and the closing point was that they had a Coke on their desk at 9 a.m. Anyway, so... thanks. This is what she talked about was if you're going to build your app really in a native way and so forth. What I'm going to talk about is the other things you can do that might be easier and quicker to market, and but also maybe not as flexible. The first thing I'm going to talk about is Autism Village. Autism Village is a nonprofit. The goal of Autism Village is, well, we've got a number of things that we want to do, but we're trying to provide services to families in the autism community with the ideas. There's lots of stuff in autism research, and there's lots of stuff in, tools and, you know, train your kid for this and this and that and the other thing. Autism Village is about navigating the day-to-day. And so our first release was all about you want to go to a restaurant, you'd like to take your kid, you know your kid, this might be a good day, this might be a bad day. What's a place near you that might be autism friendly, that gets it? So the idea was to build almost kind of a Yelp for autism. And what we've created is So Autism Village, it's a website, but also we've got an app. And the idea is, again, but it's all crowdsourced, which is the other interesting thing. We are in the store. We're in both the Google store and the Apple store. And the idea is people come in, they register, and they start telling everybody else in their community about what works. You got reviews. You can filter on not autism friendly. That's the troop we were talking about earlier. Of course, don't step down. There's a scout troop in Malvern, which is paired with a neurotypical scout troop, but it's for autistic kids. This is not a native app. If you actually look at our app, this is actually all HTML, and also we're using a platform called Connect. It's a small portal-style platform that they then have the ability to wrap their platform and your customizations into an app. So these are screenshots from literally my phone. It's got information, we use a service for localization. Oops, I'm supposed to get too far from the mic. I'm talk loud. but the idea is, you know, what's near me? Here's things that are, let's see, I was visiting Tulsa recently, so I did a search for what's in Tulsa. Fortunately, nobody's reviewing anything. Reviews, so forth and so on. But we didn't build any of this code. We used a platform that was already there that had the portal technology that allowed us, I'm gonna flip back real quick, allowed us to figure each of these are little portlet type things, and we configured them, and that got us to the world a lot faster than if we'd had to code each thing. So that is also an option to look like, because there's a lot of portlet-type technologies out there. Connect is actually right now a partner of ours, and they are giving this to us free. So we're very grateful for that. But on the other hand, you do lose a lot of flexibility, a lot of look and feel type things, because, again, you're not building natively. One of the other things that we did is we are building out training. So the idea is that if a business wants to train its employees on how to be autism friendly, that's our catchphrase. But what we did there is, again, we didn't build a lot of software. We used open source. We used Moodle, which I'm sure probably if you're a student in here, you've probably bumped into Moodle. Moodle is open source. We got a couple of Amazon Web Services instances. We downloaded the Moodle source code. We loaded it up. And then we loaded in our content, because for us the content and the navigation was important. We didn't need to build that software. So again, as you think about what you're trying to achieve, think about how much of it you need to build or how much you can actually use, because the open source world is amazing. There is so much out there. And again, you can use little services here and there, but you should focus your energies, and this is something I say a lot in my real job as opposed to my nighttime job. You should focus your effort on where you add value. So if it's something that somebody else can do for you that frankly, one of the things we're talking about at Chaikin is building a notification service for stock alerts, and I'll talk a little more about Chaikin in a minute. But the interesting thing is, I said, we shouldn't build a notification service. There's if this, then that. You build a channel into if this, then that. Say, I want to know if IBM goes bullish. And that way, somebody else can take care of sending you the text message or sending you the email or whatever. So again, when you're thinking about your concept and what you're trying to achieve, focus on where you have the specific domain knowledge or the value, and use the tools or the open source or whatever that's out there for you. And again, this is actually we've got a number of people who have gone through this training, and it's literally Moodle running on a couple of web services and AWS instances costs us $20 a month. You know, that's literally, aside from the weekend I spent standing it up. So now I'm going to talk about my day job. I'm a CTO and now COO, be careful what you ask for, of a company called Chaikin Analytics. And what we are is a stock analysis package. So I was looking at the description of this section, and meaningfulness has lots of different meanings. The theory was when they first launched the company was to help individual investors plan for their retirement, and a lot of individual investors were underserved, particularly in the wake of what happened in 2008. Well, that's great. Had a free iPhone app. It was awesome. Didn't monetize. So we now have a rather expensive application. But let's talk a little bit how this is all implemented. And this is where I'm going to start talking about the other ways you can do things. This is a web app that runs on on tablets, et cetera. We have a native iPad app, but we haven't been updating it because it's just not worth it. HTML5, CSS, cascading style sheets, JavaScript. This rich of an experience doing that. The business logic, the database and the business logic is all in the back end. But I mean, this is pretty snazzy for not a lot of code. Granted, yes, there's a lot of JSONs flying around the world. The front end talks to the back end via web services, APIs, and so forth. But this is literally just HTML5, CSS, and JavaScript to glue it together to do the web services API. We use the AngularJS, I'm looking if anybody rings any bells with people, but we use that and Bootstrap and all those other libraries. But it's a pretty sophisticated application. Our back end is currently it's in our a hosting provider. We could move it to AWS in whatever, because it's literally just Linux, Apache, MySQL. using bog standards too. Now, granted, it's more expensive because we've got some sophisticated business logic and databases behind all this. There's, you know, years of data and all these calcs and everything like that. But we, again, focused our energies on where we added value as opposed to what we can get really for free. And again, we were focused on the portability issue. One of the things that we're talking about pretty actively, in fact, we just spent 2 days in an offsite, is how to take this experience, and because we've now made this fully responsive, that's one of the things when you think about HTML5 and about this whole development environment, is you want to be responsive so that it works nicely on any footprint. But obviously on an iPhone, this might be a little hard to see. So we're now beginning to look at how we sort of slice this experience down. But because we've designed this to be fully responsive in HTML5, we can then configure it so that it works on the platform. Again, that makes us able to run on lots of different platforms and gets away from the horror. Well, not the horror. Again, but it's not the great experience. Our iPad app has a wonderful thing where you can swipe through the charts. It's awesome. It's too much money, too much investment effort, development effort for what it's worth. It does feel really great though, but life goes on. Just to give you a couple more pictures of what we do, because this is my day job. Where are we on time? Oh, go fast, okay. You know, we've just got a number of different tools. We've just recently, this is actually something kind of interesting, I just want to show up briefly. It's a stocks like this tool that allows you to say, I like Amgen, give me stocks like that. And then really quickly, so one other thing to think about, we always talk about horses for courses. If you've got an idea, do you need an app for it, or do you need maybe Alexa? So one of the things we're talking about is, I talked about if this, then that, maybe it's something that you can have an Alexa skill. Hey Alexa, you know, tell me how IBM is going to do over the next 6 months. So it's been, this has been something I've been doing in my so-called spare time. Building an Alexa skill is really, really easy. Granted, you need your business logic and your back end. You need some kind of back end. But literally, it's defining the skill and giving it the, how you answer the, ask the questions. And then it's some code. They actually have an environment at Amazon that you can put your little stubby little program in called Lambda, and it will then, the skill will go find your little program in the Lambda thing and do what it's supposed to do and come back. So it's really, the documentation's fantastic, and it's, again, think about what makes sense for what you're trying to do. If it's really just that simple where you're just trying to get information to people, maybe it's not even a full app, it's something like Alexa, Siri, all those sort of voice-activated Internet of Things type things that are happening. Done. Questions for either one of us? I know that was really fast. Sorry. Yes.
What's your user base?
For which?
I guess.
Well, in Autism Village, we have almost 17,000 downloads, and they are autism families. You know, they are people who are literally looking for, the pizza place near them that's going to work for them. Chicken Analytics, it is high-end. It tends to be people with significant, assets, I guess is the word I'll use. They'll have a lot of money invested. Or we are also selling to the registered investment advisor market because our price point is fairly high. That said, the offsite is coming out with some lower-tier projects, so search us in about a year and there should be cheaper things available. Whoa, okay. You first.
Do you know about Autism Village? Does it link to any sort of medical resources?
No, not now. Although we have a lot of stuff in our queue where we're talking about being able to, what we were interested in originally was a collaboration idea where, because families who have autistic children, there's the paper trail is huge and the collaboration. So what we were going to create was a collaboration space where the families could invite the different caregivers and social workers and teachers into a space where they could share documents. And then you would start getting in more integration. But that's down the fundraising queue, shall we say? And back here, there was a question.
Can you talk a little bit about teachers and
Well, actually, we haven't gotten that far. That's my project for tomorrow afternoon, is to actually finish the skill. The reason we had the idea was that we heard that Steve Wynn is putting an Amazon Echo in every one of his hotel rooms. And so we saw it as not so much a sales opportunity as a branding opportunity. Because again, if you have an Alexa, an Amazon Echo, you get an email every week with new skills. And so the idea was to get people interested in what we were doing and have it be more of a lead acquisition channel than an actual customer-focused type thing. If this, then that, we would actually train them on, if you want to do this, you have this service, you go in, you open that channel, and you can hook it up to whatever you want. And there's a hand over here.
Hang on. So is your idea the work that you're doing with Alexa that would hit your application to get that data?
Yep.
Is that what you're talking about?
Okay. Yeah, it's down here. I'm sorry, this is just a slide, but there's actually what you can do in the Lambda is the code sample that I was working with goes to, I think, Wikipedia and gets news stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And you basically just have a URL you invoke that returns you text that then you parse into the spoken response. Oh, no. Mark Chaykin is if you've been in the financial space, you've heard of Moneyflow, Chaykin Moneyflow. They talk about a lot, the talking heads on CNBC and so forth, they mention it. He is actually a many more years than me, stock market veteran, and so the core of our IP is oriented around the Chaykin Power Gauge rating, which is a 20-factor model which has proved to be pretty good at predicting performance of a stock over the next 3 to 6 months. It's not a short-term thing. Don't use it for intraday. But if you're trying to look at a long, again, this is about people really planning for retirement. That's what that's about.
So I just wanted to comment on Alexa. I was at the Consumer Electronics Show the first week of January, and there were 500 products that were using Alexa. They were saying there were going to be 700 more. And then there were just jokes about, and maybe not everyone in this room will get it, but in 2001, Space Odyssey, you had HAL,
yep,
who was the computer that took over the world. So it's really interesting stuff that's going on with that.
My Alexa runs my household. I walk into a room and I say, Alexa, turn on the lights. Alexa, tell me what's going on. Yeah, no, I think it's becomes the thing, and I know we're running out of time.
Yeah.
Any other questions, though, real quick?
If you have one quick question, we can end.
I was just curious, you mentioned in the same breath as Alexa, there's Siri, there's Cortana. So I was wondering if it's similar to the native app, if the command response, format is different across.
Well, what's interesting is Apple hasn't opened Siri up in the same way.
Okay.
This is part of Amazon's strategy to own the entire world, whereas Apple's much more like this. But eventually, given the pressure that they're getting, and of course there's Google Home, which I would expect to go this route as well, but Amazon's just ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
Anything else?
We have one round of applause for our speakers. Did everybody get a chance to...